Victoria counted each second. The emptiness of the day lay ahead of her, the seconds, minutes, and hours to fill, the routine of daily living before falling into bed and waking up to do it all over again. The clock counting was a mindless exercise, but it was an obsessive habit that had kept her sane. "But it's stopped you moving forward too, hasn't it?" she thought, studying her face in the bathroom mirror. "Today will be different. Today is the day," she told herself. Her best friend Sally had set the wheels in motion. "The best years of your life are ahead," she'd exclaimed over their second bottle of wine one Friday afternoon about a month ago. "You're only 34. You're single, and you're ridiculously gorgeous. You don't even know it, for Christ's sake. And you've yet to reach your sexual peak." She'd winked at her, raising her glass. At the time, Victoria had groaned and rolled her eyes. Yes, of course she'd missed the sex since Toby had died, but she'd put all thoughts of her pleasure aside as she tried to come to terms with being widowed so young. A widow? Good God, it made her sound so old. She knew she wasn't to blame in any way for Toby's death. No, that fell squarely in the lap of the cocky 16-year-old driver of the stolen Tesla. The fact that it was a silent car and that the kid was too busy showing off to his girlfriend and wasn't paying attention were contributing factors, as the coroner helpfully pointed out. There had been no mention at the inquest of the moments preceding Toby walking into the Tesla's path. The unpleasant confrontation, as Toby had called it, her tearful accusations and his vehement denials. What a liar he'd been. They'd married straight after graduation, and for the 13 years of her marriage, there had only been Toby. The thought of looking for someone new and starting all over again hadn't appealed to her so far. But she sensed a stirring inside her. It was time. Time to stop feeling guilty about moving on. She looked deep into her reflection, and the pupils of her cat-like green eyes dilated as she imagined all the possibilities for pleasure that were out there. Downstairs, she made a cup of tea and took it into the sunny sitting room. They had bought the Primrose Hill house early in their marriage, and as she looked around the room now, she acknowledged that she was very fortunate to live in such a beautiful home, even if the last 17 months had numbed her to the good things in her life. At her bleakest moments, her grandmother had swept in from her country estate in Gloucestershire and reminded Victoria that however dark things seemed, it most certainly was not the end of the world. Lady Isabel may have been born privileged, but she was a strong woman and had been Victoria's rock for almost her entire life. She stopped in front of the framed photograph of her parents that sat on the mantelpiece and picked it up. What a handsome couple they had been. Her father, Richard, the Duke of Byberry, looked every inch the Gloucestershire gentleman farmer. A patrician nose and highly coloured cheeks, sandy brown hair that was difficult to tame, and just a slight jut of the chin that told everyone he was aware of his social status. But from what she could remember of him, he was never a snob, and had treated everyone with the same courtesy. He had been loved by all the estate workers and local residents, and was a popular figure at the local pub. At the Byberry Arms, they'd referred to him as Duke Dickie. Apparently, he'd been quite tickled by this nickname and often used to announce himself as Duke Dickie when answering the telephone at home. She treasured the memories she had of him, and of Eloise, her fun-loving mother. Her mother's looks were a somewhat exotic contrast to his Englishness. Like Victoria, she had chestnut hair that in this photo was in a style very recognisably from the late 1970s. Who was the actress that had made this style famous, Victoria wondered? Ah, yes, Farrah Fawcett Major in Charlie's Angels. Her skin was a deeper gold than Victoria's, but they shared the same feline green eyes. At Cambridge, some students had remarked to Victoria that she didn't look typically English, and she'd told them that she took after her mother, who had inherited some of the physical traits of her French grandmother, Fleur.